Greetings and welcome to Tales from the Otherwood, a podcast exploring the folk tales and folklore of the East Midlands and beyond. I'm Dylan Knight, and I'll be your guide as we take one of the many paths in this magical, ever-changing woodland. Welcome to the first episode of 2024. Here's wishing you, dear listener, a very happy new year. If you're one of my regular listeners, you'll have noticed that there wasn't an episode for January, and I'm really, really sorry about that. For some, February marks the return of spring and was known to the Anglo-Saxons as Solmanath, or Cake Month, where it was thought cakes were made and given to the gods of old. We normally associate February with customs such as Candlemas, Pancake Day, 13th of February for those interested, Valentine's Day, and the beginning of Lent. Shrove Tuesday, which also falls on the 13th of February, even takes its name from the word shriva, or shriven, which was the Anglo-Saxon term to describe absolving oneself of their sins through confession. Strangely enough, even Candlemas is said to have origins of Roman paganism. But why am I harping on about Christian and pagan beliefs and traditions? Why don't I just get on with the story? As the roots of the Otherwood take us once more into Lincolnshire, we are introduced to the rural traditions that were thought to encourage and hurry spring's arrival. In fact, we will see how the beliefs of one religion can blur with another. Tales from the Otherwood presents The Green Mist. Long ago, it was often thought that the land was haunted by boggarts and bogles. And although these mysterious beings were said to help with the growing of the harvest from the budding of spring all the way through to the reaping of autumn, it was in winter they were afeared. During winter's rain, the earth was asleep, having been sung hushibai songs at the end of the harvest. As the boggarts and bogles had no plants to grow and look after, they would take out their boredom on the people, playing practical jokes or scaring them to wit's end until it was time to get back to work in the spring. To stop these spirits from coming into their homes or bringing mischief upon them, the folk of Lincolnshire had their own ways of dealing with these bored entities. Every evening at twilight, the people would carry lights in their hands around their houses. They would smear blood on the doorsill to scare away the horrors. To ensure a good harvest, they would place salt and bread on the flat stones set up by the lane side. If they wanted rain, they would spill water onto the four corners of the fields. They thought upon the shining sun and reckoned that although it had made the earth, it was also responsible for days of good fortune and days of bad luck. The church was there, of course. It was even thought there were two churches, one with the priests and the candles, the other just a bunch of old ways, kept hidden and secret amongst the folk themselves. At some point, both churches became as one, and all their ways got mixed up, and people couldn't tell you how one was different from the other. At midwinter, Yule was celebrated with grand services in the churches, with candles and flags and songs. In the cottages, there were candles, cakes, and lots of merrymaking. The priests of the church had no idea the folk were waking up the dying year. Neither did they know the red wine poured onto the doorsill until the cock crowed was done to bring in good luck for the coming year. So intertwined were the customs, the people didn't think they were doing anything different. And so went the rituals of winter. But at spring, the folk would say their spells and prayers and went out to every field in turn and dug up a spade of earth from each corner and said strange words. Words the folk didn't really understand anymore, but that's what their grandparents did and their grandparents before them. And this went back to long since when. Every morning, saw them on the doorsill with bread and salt in their hands to greet the dawn. And they stood there, watching, waiting, for the arrival of the green mist. For the green mist is what told the folk the earth was awake again, and now the trees, the plants, and the seeds would bud and burst open with life. This story concerns one particular family who had done all of that, just as their grandparents and their grandparents before them. But this year, the winter was harsh, and the daughter had become ill. Where she was the prettiest lass in the village, she was now very pale and weak. As winter went on, she became paler and weaker, about as strong as a bag of bones. The poor girl couldn't even stand up by herself, and only had strength enough to lay at the window in her bed as she watched winter go by. "Oh, oh, mother," she would say over and over again. "Oh, mother, if only I could wake the spring with you again. Maybe the green mist would make me strong and well, like the trees and the flowers and the corn in the fields." The mother would then come over, shush her daughter quiet, and comfort her, promising she would indeed come with the family to join their neighbours in the waking, and would grow strong again once spring had arrived. But day by day, the girl got paler and weaker, until she looked like a snowflake fading in the sun. Day by day, winter went by, with lashing rain, with blustering winds, with rattling hail, with thick snow and slippery frost, and with pale sunshine. Until the waking of spring was almost there. The poor girl watched and waited until it was the time for going into the fields, but so weak and ill was she. The girl knew she wouldn't be able to join the others when it was time. Not wanting to give up, she made her mother promise to carry her to the door sill at the coming of the green mist, so she might toss out the bread and salt to the earth with her own poor, frail hands. The days went on, and the folk would go into the fields in the morning to dig up the corners and watch out for the green mist. One evening, the girl had been laying down, watching the garden intently, and hadn't spoken all day, and then said to her mother, "If the green mist doesn't come in the morn's dawning, I'll not wait for it longer. The earth is calling me, and the seeds are bursting as will bloom over my head. I know it well, mother, and yet, if only I could see the spring wake once again. Mother, I swear, as I'd ask no more than to live as long as one of those cowslips has come every year by the gate, and to die with the first of them when the summer is in." The mother didn't like that, and hushed up the girl as quickly as she could, for she was afraid of the bogles and the other things the folk believed in, the things they couldn't see or couldn't hear, for the folk were never safe. They were never alone. But on the next day, the dawn had brought the green mist with it, rising from the ground and wrapping itself all around, as green as grass in the summer sunshine, smelling as sweet as herbs in spring. The girl was carried to the doorsill, where she crumbled the bread and scattered the salt with her own hands. Even said the strange old words of welcoming, though it was only as loud as a whisper. Looking to the gate where the cowslips grew, she smiled and was carried back to her bed by the window and slept, dreaming of summer, of flowers, and of happiness. No one knows for sure if it was the green mist that had done it, but from that day on, the girl grew stronger and prettier than ever. By the time the cowslips were budding in April, she was running about and laughing like a sunbeam in the cottage. Yet, she was still so pale and wan She looked like a will-o'-the-wyke, zipping this way and that. On the cold and cloudy days, she would be found, sitting, shivering by the fire as she tried to keep warm. And although her mother and father never said it out loud, the girl looked almost dead. But when the sun came out, she would get up from her chair and stretch out her arms and then would sing and dance as though she could only live in the warmness of the sunshine. The day came when the cowslips had bloomed from their buds and burst into flower, yet the girl had grown so strange. She was indeed beautiful. Her hair was glossy, her eyes danced, and her paleness seemed to almost glow with a pale light. And all she cared for was the cowslips. Every morning, she would attend the cowslips and knelt by them to give them water and dance to them as the sun shone upon them. Her mother looked on in horror, thinking this wasn't right. This was not natural, and it had something to do with the bogles. She was sure of it. So the mother begged the daughter to leave the flowers alone and swore she had a mind to pull the cowslips up by the roots and throw them away herself. The girl stopped her dancing and turned slowly to her mother and gave her a very odd look, and then said in a soft, low voice, "If you aren't tired of me, mother, never pick one of them flowers. They'll fade of themselves soon enough, aye. Soon enough, you know." The mother stormed back inside, sobbing into her work, not saying a word to anyone of what had just happened. Not until after all this was done. One day, a lad from the village came by and stopped at the gate to chat with the family. And as he stood there gossiping with them all, he couldn't take his eyes off the girl. So beautiful, so joyous, and yet there was something different about her he couldn't quite put his finger on. Seeing the conversation just going to the two of them, the family let them be. And perhaps this would help, they thought. The lad and the girl talked and laughed, and as the lad thought, she was indeed the prettiest lass in the village. Throughout the entire conversation, his hand had been playing with something. A flower he had picked from somewhere close to the gate. He hadn't even thought about it, and must have absent-mindedly picked it whilst they were chatting. A cowslip. Time was getting on, and as he was making his leave, the lad gave the flower to the girl. "Here you go," he beamed. "A pretty flower for the ramping lass." The girl smiled, taking his flower. Looking at the cowslip, her smile disappeared instantly. "Did they pick this?" she asked seriously. "I did, but I meant no harm by it. Did I do wrong?" The lad never got his answer. Not in words, anyway. The girl looked at the flower, then looked at the lad, and then looked all around her. She looked at the green trees, the growing grass, the yellow blossoms, and the bright golden sun. Then she started flinching and shaking as though the sunlight that she had loved so much was burning her. She ran into the house without a word, but with a mournful sounding wail, and the cowslip clutched in her hand to her chest. She never spoke again, but lay on the bed, staring at the flower in her hand, and as it faded, so did she. The next morning, lying on the bed was a shrunken, dead thing, with a shriveled cowslip in its hand, and the mother covered it with clothes, thinking of the beautiful, joyful girl, dancing in the sunshine by the golden blossoms the day before. The bogles had heard the girl's wish and had made it come true. She had bloomed with the cowslips and faded with the first of them. It's as true as death. Right. Storytelling is thirsty work. Time for a cup of tea, I think. Put on the kettle or crack open your flask. It's time for a drink and a chat. Bogles and boggarts, rituals for warding off the spirits, rituals and offerings for the earth at springtime. An account of two different kinds of churches in the land and a life claimed by unseen forces. This story is absolutely dripping in folk belief and practices. Or is it? The Green Mist was first recorded by Mrs. M.C. Balfour in her book Legends of the Lincolnshire Cars, first published in 1891. For the Cars in Lincolnshire was a gloomy swamp marshland before it was drained in the 17th century to make way for more farmland. However, the locals believed the Cars were haunted by bogles and boggarts and strange fairy folk called the Tiddy Folk or Yarthkin. In the tale, you'll have heard me referring to the girl as looking like a Will-o'-the-Wyke, which is the Lincolnshire name for the Will-o'-the-Wisp phenomenon of spectral lights associated with boggy and marshland areas. Neil Philip, author of the Watkins Book of English Folk Tales, published in 2022, is from the school of folklorists who do not consider Balfour's collection as genuine folk tales. According to Philip, the writings of Balfour are sufficiently strange and unlike anything else collected even in Lincolnshire. Balfour's accounts were written with an attempt at preserving the Lincolnshire dialect from which they were told. Neil Philip makes a point of saying how Balfour's writing of the dialect differs from another account from the folklorist Mabel Peacock in her Tales and Rhymes in the Lindsay Folk Speech from 1886. Even further pointing out, some of the words Balfour wrote down are more Scottish in appearance, and if I was to read them out loud, he wasn't wrong, which also seems to go against Balfour's claim that the Lincolnshire dialect is supposed to be close to the original Anglo-Saxon. Philip does go on to write that it may have been the case that Balfour did indeed document the tales as she was told them, but they lean more towards Gothic horror than a standard folk tale. Maureen James, author of Lincolnshire Folk Tales from 2013, is a staunch defender of Balfour's works and has even written an entire book on the subject of the legitimacy of Balfour's Tales of the Lincolnshire Cars. Her argument is that if Balfour had made up the 10 Tales of the Lincolnshire Cars, then she would have had to devise the different stories and write them in different voices. She doesn't, and has even caught some of the local nuances of the Cars area in her writing. Had she faked it, there would have been evidence of the Lincoln dialect from different parts of the county to try and make it all seem authentic. From the Lincolnshire Folk Tales, James gives Balfour's full name as Marie Clotilde Balfour, and even explains that she was Scottish-born and had grown up in her first years in New Zealand until she spent the rest of her childhood in Edinburgh. It is entirely my guess that Mrs. Balfour, whilst living in Lincolnshire with her husband, did indeed try to record the local stories she heard in the accent of the area she was living. And although she tried and tried very hard to capture the original dialect, she came across words that she may not have understood and may have A, reminded her of the Scots accent her father and school teachers would have had, or B, fell back on the familiar Scottish accent and words to fill in the blanks of the words that she could not otherwise understand. Maureen James does share in her book that offerings being given to the land and an association with cowslips and magic did exist in Lincolnshire, and that the clergyman at the end of the 19th century had made remarks about the county being rife with the blending of practices of Christian and pagan beliefs. She quotes another folklorist, Maureen Sutton, as her source of finding evidence of locals celebrating the awakening of the earth spirits come the time of the vernal equinox in March, and how farmers at Swineshead would awaken the sleeping spirits of the earth by digging up 4 spades of earth from each of the corners of the field. In fact, the digging up of the fields and uttering strange words may have come from a ritual from Anglo-Saxon times called the Achabot, or field remedy. There was no specific time this had to be performed. It could be performed at any time of the year and was meant to be done if your field became sick, bewitched, or no longer delivered produce. Before dawn, four pieces of turf were cut from the four corners of the field. A concoction was made from oil, honey, yeast, holy water, and milk from every cow you have, and a piece of every tree and plant in the area was all dripped onto these pieces of turf. Prayers were offered, as was the Paternoster, the Lord's Prayer to you and me, and a priest would then sing four masses over them before sunset. These pieces of turf were then returned to the field and reinterred from where they had originally been dug up, but each had a wooden cross made of rowan for repelling malicious witchcraft underneath them. Whoever performs the ritual bows to the east 9 times, saying a prayer to the east. After more prayers being given, and a curious act which involves taking seeds from beggars, but with you giving back twice as many seeds as you took from them, these seeds are then set on your plough, and then you say, Erce, 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 Mother of Earth, may the All-Wielder, the Eternal Lord, grant you fields growing and putting forth shoots, increasing and becoming strong, tall shafts, bright crops, and the broad barley crops, and the white wheat crops, and all the crops of the earth. May the Eternal Lord and his holy ones who are in heaven grant to him that this field may be protected against every enemy and guarded against every evil from poison sown across the land. Now I ask the ruler who created this world that there may be no talking woman or cunning man who is able to change the words thus spoken. Then you cut the earth with the plough and with the seeds, saying, Be well, earth, mother of mankind, be growing in the embrace of God, filled with the food for the use of all. And finally, you then bake a loaf of bread, and then lay this in the first furrow ploughed, and finish with more prayers. It might interest you to know that the Achabot was in fact practiced by Christians. I think it's the first recording of a folk ritual that blends both Christian and pagan elements. Of course, the priests may call upon the grace of their god, and yet the Earth Mother was invoked for the union of earth and sky. I can't see the folk of Lincolnshire reenacting the Achabot in its entirety, but we do have the four sods of earth being cut from the corners of the fields, we have the prayers and strange words, and we also have the bread being given to the earth, as well as the seeds, rather than salt, as it says in the story. We first encounter the boggarts and bogles in a tale from Northamptonshire in the episode The Boggart and the Farmer, or when I tell the story live, I've started calling it Fair's Fair. If you've heard that episode already, you'll know why. If you haven't, I'd recommend listening to that episode for more context, especially as some of the themes explored are also here in this episode. In his book, Mysterious Lincolnshire, from 2007, Daniel Codd writes that the term bogle, although unclear in its meaning, appears to be a cover-all term for defining different types of supernatural creature. A lot like the term boggart was used, as we discussed in the Boggart and Farmer episode. Although Codd does add that the belief of bogles reached East Anglia as well. Interestingly, in this story, the bogles are only referred to. We don't actually encounter them in any physical form, and so we can only imagine that the bogles as being a form of earth spirit. Were they responsible for what happened to the girl? Or did she in fact come down with an illness and was so intent in her belief that that is what killed her in the end? I shall leave that up for you to decide. Before I bring the chat to a close, I just wanted to share an update on the previous episode, The Boggart and the Farmer, and that is while researching, I found in Daniel Codd's book that there is a Lincolnshire version of the same tale. The story is virtually the same, although there are subtle differences. There is a location being given, which was Mumby, east of Alford. The farmer threatens to get the local magistrate involved, and this is what spurs the boggart to come up with the idea of sharing crops. Unlike the Northamptonshire version, where the farmer plants turnips, in this one it's potatoes, and when it comes to the harvest race, The farmer seeks the advice of a soothsayer who recommends laying iron rods in the field to blunt the boggart's blade, because not only is the boggart huge in his size, he's also a lot physically stronger as well. After all is done, and the story goes pretty much like it does in the Northamptonshire version, the boggart storms off, and it then takes to scaring travellers on the road, keeping whatever items they've dropped for itself. Daniel Codd even provides a description of boggarts as being ugly, hairy creatures, short in stature but having muscular arms. Whether or not this is the description of the one in the story, or is a local type of boggart, is not clear, but it's something that we're going to keep an ear out for when we encounter other boggart tales here in the Otherwood. I'd like to finish with a comment from one of my listeners, Rob M. from York, who wrote, "The podcast is a pleasure to listen to. I particularly enjoyed The Woodman and the Hatchet. I remember my grandfather telling me that one." Well, thank you very much, Rob. I love the fact that The Woodman and the Hatchet was told to you by your own granddad, and that you remember him telling you, which just goes to show that these tales and stories are indeed kept alive by being told. What a wonderful memory to have, and thanks, Rob, for getting in touch. Always a pleasure. Tales from the Otherwood was written and produced by me, Dylan Knight. If you could please leave a review of this podcast wherever you listen to it, I'd appreciate that a lot, as it helps other people find my podcast. If you have any memories of tales being told, or would like to hear a specific folktale, or maybe even share a tale or local tradition that you'd like me to read out, you can now contact me by email at talesfromtheotherwood@gmail.com, or on Instagram at tales_from_the_otherwood. Thank you for listening, and remember, stay safe, and watch out for making wishes without thinking. You never know what might be listening.